sexy, spooky bones.
Hello and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
You gotcha, baby. trying new catchphrases. I don't think that one's going to stick, though. This is John. Sorry about that.
Brainstorming. Yeah.
Smoke 'em and toke 'em, baby.
You kill 'em, we grill 'em. Something. And welcome to the show. This week we are reviewing Cemetery Man. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts and then we go to a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Corner, proper TV Corner. Now we got a real TV show here now, finally. The Fall of the House of Usher. We're reviewing season one, episode one, A Midnight Jury. And there's not going to be another season of this. Why do they call it season one? It's just an adaptation. Oh, I mean,
my thing just says TV miniseries. Oh, but there is season one.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, there's not going to be a season two. Flanagan doesn't really make season twos.
No.
So, on the Netflix.
But maybe for this one. Maybe for The House of the Fall of the Usherings.
It's about Usher Raymond. Yeah. It's about his career.
Very disappointed it wasn't called Fall of the House of Usher My Way.
Yeah, I need that that story again about how he cheated on on what's her face. I don't remember. I want to say T.I. or T-Ball Left Eye Lopez. That's what I'm trying to get.
Oh.
But she didn't date Left Eye Lopez. He dated the other girl. Left Eye Lopez died.
Yeah.
From TLC. So which one was she? She was... Yeah. LC or
was she the tender? Was she the loving? No, I think Left Eye was the loving, right?
Sure.
No comments or jokes about that.
Rest in power. Yeah.
I would like more backstory on how he is somebody's cousin, right? I want to say Snoop Dogg, but I could be wrong.
No, not Snoop Dogg. That can't be right. No, is it? I don't think so, because I think Usher is from Ohio. And Snoop Dogg is from Compton.
Well,
you think they still could be related? Cousins?
Maybe. I'm probably wrong. Wait, let's see. Oh, his parents were Jonetta Patton and Usher Raymond III. I'm just kidding. That means nothing.
Obviously, yeah. settles it.
Yeah, I guess I'm wrong. I don't know. I don't know why I thought he was, like, kind of a Nepo guy.
Usher? I think he just got into showbiz early, right? He was, like, a kid thing? He did kid stuff? Kid performer?
I definitely remember only the songs he did when he was that young.
the
only song I really remember by him is the one My Way, where he's like in the junkyard and he has all the dance moves, and that was like the big part of the video is just the dancing. That, yeah. that new meme he has right now where he says like watch this and he moves his hands out of his face.
Oh yeah.
Which is really funny.
Yeah, that's good. That was good. All right, so anyway, that's the fall of the House of Usher.
Now you know where he's been. He's okay.
He didn't fall. He's fine. Alrighty, let's get serious. This is the Fall of the House Usher, Mike Flanagan, horror master. He has his regular troupe back with him of adaptation of Edgar Allan Poe's story, I'm assuming.
Yes.
But I feel like this one's very liberal, right? Very liberal adaptation. It's not like a direct...
Yeah, I'm assuming. I was going to read it this week and then kind of let you know. But I also don't want to ruin it for myself.
And I also think it's like... They're definitely taking a Shakespearean tone for this one, right? Like the fall of the family and all the spooky bits. That's kind of the sense I got, especially the beginning.
Which is why I think I kind of want to read the short story, because I'm thinking it kind of is that style. I've read a couple of Edgar Allan Poe's other stuff, and it's like, yeah, it's kind of like that. It's very dramatic in that sense. It's very theatrical. Like even... I'm blanking on everything right now. I'm a little bit tired today. Sorry, everybody. The one with the pendulum, the pendulum, is that what it's called?
The pendulum, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of that is just one long inner monologue that the guy is like dealing with and how he's freaking out until the pendulum gets close enough to cut his ropes and he escapes. Spoiler alert. Sorry if Mike Flanagan was adapting the pit in the pendulum.
He just threw a computer in the trash right now.
eight episode story arc where the pendulum gets lower and lower every episode.
Yeah.
So how do we feel about the ushers being in the Star Wars universe?
What? What do you mean? Hold on, let me...
That
was not the question that I thought you were going to ask me, but okay, I don't know.
Because they're lawyer.
What are we talking about? Mark Hamill doing... I like Mark Hamill because he just like... He makes very big choices. I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean that like he's playing a character. He's disappeared into his character. Similar to like, you know, how he's like the... People need to be reminded he was like the voice of Joker, and he has all these like a long career in voice acting aside from his Star Wars stuff. So seeing him here was great. Loved it. I love everything I'm looking at him. He's just completely like in this character, and I can't wait to kind of want to know more about him, his function, because he just seems like the go-to fixer lawyer type. But was he married to the sister? Am I crazy? Did I read that wrong?
I don't know.
To Mary McDonald, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. I got the sense they were together, but I could have just misread that whole thing. So I'm going to assume we both loved this.
Oh, no. Yeah, it was fucking great. I mean, there was a lot going on, so I think like I ideally should have rewatched it. I just didn't have time. Because I was like, oh, fuck, like, a lot happened. Clearly, people are dead. There's no wondering about
mystery.
That. There's no... I mean,
all his kids are dead.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that's the whole point of the story, right? But I like how there's no real question about how they die, because when you see them briefly as, like, dead, maybe they're spirits or whatever, I don't really know, they each look like how they died, I'm assuming.
Right, how we're going to find out they died, which I think is going to be, I'm assuming, a component of the show. But
getting back to Mark Hamill real quick, I'm happy he did this also, because I tried watching The Machine, that fucking movie with, what's his face, the comedian?
Oh, yeah. I think the one without a shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fucking awful.
Are we surprised?
No, not at all. But I was hoping like, oh, well, let's see how good Mark Hamill is. And he's doing great in the part. It's just like, that dude Bird is not a fucking actor. Like, it's terrible.
Well, also Mark Hamill wasn't he in What We Do in the Shadows with the...
Yeah, he's the one, the reason Matt Berry becomes Jackie Daytona.
Laszlo. Yeah. Laszlo becomes Jackie Daytona. Human bartender. Yeah,
well, good for him, and good for all these people being part of Mike Flanagan's clan, because I don't know what else they would get. I was mentioning Henry Thomas. I'm like, fuck yeah, he was like, he's so good in the show. He's like ratty, I guess. Like, it's really interesting.
Yeah,
with the ponytail.
Yeah, I caught that too. He's like a ponytail. And he sounds very, like, full of himself and stuck up, and he's the firstborn kid.
Yeah, I guess so. If we're going to compare this to, because everybody's been comparing, like, Succession to Oh my god, Arrested Development. He would kind of be like the Job character.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So far, yeah, and I thought that there was a nice they definitely set up a lot of mystery in the pilot, because I think we meet the dad played by Roderick Usher, played by Bruce Greenwood.
Yes.
And he's at their last group of kids' funerals. And then he goes back home, and then he talks and he's retelling who killed his kids to the
Played by Carl Lumbly, right? Auguste Dupin.
Right. He was like the attorney that was suing the company or something, right?
Yeah, something like that.
So, and he's retelling very interesting backstory where I kind of didn't understand it. I don't know if you want to maybe clarify it a little bit. Because it seems like they were kids and their mother worked for like this very rich man, and they lived down at the end of the street or something. But she kind of went crazy or something.
My assumption is that they were having an affair.
Yes, that's right? My assumption too. Yeah.
And she didn't say anything because I guess like he was supporting the family.
But right.
The thing that I think we don't have an answer to yet is I think she got cursed. And also her not wanting to take medicine, because that's not what the godly thing to do is, turned her into a
zombie.
Like she lived long enough to fucking kill that guy. Yeah. I was like, is she a zombie or is she just like living long enough right now to like kill this guy and then just die?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's the sense I got too, without it being completely spelled out, because I think that he was responsible for their fortune because they weren't rich.
Yeah.
Right away, but I mean, clearly after the mother rises and kills him, that they kind of like somehow, it's unclear at this point, but they kind of inherited that money, and that's how they became uber rich and stuff. So,
right, yeah,
that's the sense I got. And they have an awesome sequence of her rising from the dead and attacking him. That shit was Mike Flanagan special. I really loved all of that. It looked great.
Yeah, like, I also like, I'm assuming the one of the ghosts that's been roaming around is we're trying to figure out who Carla. How do you say her last name?
Gugino?
Huh?
Sure.
Gugino.
Gugino?
Gugino? Carla Gugino. Plays
Gesundheit. Yeah. She seems to. Yeah, we only see quick images of her. And she seems like she's like haunting Roderick Usher. But at some point, we do get a flashback of her being the bartender or something. So, but it seems like there's more to it than them attending the bar, because it sounds like Madeline and Roger killed somebody or something, yeah. Right? They want to be seen there. But it seems like there's something else going on. It didn't have that regular, like, yes, the bar was.
So, my assumption is she is aware of what's going on and is helping them, so she gets some sort of cut. I'm guessing they have to kill her at some point.
Not right, sure. That's... Yeah. There's something more to that character, obviously, because I think she pops up a lot, right? It's almost... I think when I showed you the trailer, it almost seems like she's like holding him accountable in a supernatural way. It was the vibe I got from the trailer. But who she is and stuff is kind of like going to be a mystery, I'm assuming, for the show? Centrally
maybe,
to the show?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean... Yeah. Because it seems like Bruce Greenwood is just going to let it all hang out for this guy.
Yeah.
Oh, and what was that whole conversation about? He was telling him, like, I noticed your husband wasn't there to see this or whatever. Why is that? And then it seemed like he was about to get like Bruce Greenwood was about to get that guy on something like, ah, but you're not so innocent yourself. That's what it felt like.
Right. Yep. 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 It sounded like, why was your husband not there?
Yeah.
The attorney, the U.S. attorney or whatever, husband wasn't there when he was giving his remarks and like revealed this thing to the family about them having a, whatever, like somebody turned on the family. Somebody within the family turned on them. Do you have any early suspects of who that might be? I might have one.
I feel like it's him, but...
That's one of my guesses, too, but... My guess would be the daughter of Fedrick. She seemed a little... Because they were the first family we see together because of the, you know, after they reveal... After the U.S. attorney reveals that, oh, they have an informant in the family, they have a dinner, and Frederick says when they're having that whole conversation, when they're talking, they're like one of the few that actually talk about the informant, and she kind of was the one who seems too smart, knows too much, and kind of didn't answer it directly.
Right.
You know, she wasn't upset by it, so that's why that was my early hint that maybe she could be the one to who have informed. Actually, on the family.
I do have a... I think it is... Actually, Pete Davidson was screwing around with a sword outside and like cuts his own throat.
spoilers, John, for a movie.
You reviewed like a year ago or something.
Yeah.
I've been trying to convince people to watch it.
It's like, great.
It like is okay, but the ending makes it fucking worth it.
Yeah.
One comment I had though was because I always preface it with like I don't like Pete Davidson all that much, and the person I was talking to was like, oh yeah, I like really dislike that guy. I'm like, okay, well, kind of spoiler, but he dies in like the first like 10 minutes. He's like, oh okay, I might watch it.
Yeah. Is there anything else about this? I think it's really cool to see, like, there's something really cool about seeing all of his cast of characters come back together. And he always, it seems like every show he does, he picks up like some new people who are actually really good at to this ensemble. Low-key made me wanna go back and watch that kid show he did. Was it
Midnight
Something Club? Yeah. I low-key just want to go back and rewatch it. Also, I like that Flanagan always like cast similar-looking actresses and all that stuff. Like he has a type, and Mary McDonald kind of
you mean like his wife?
Fits into that type. Yeah, she's here, and you had an interesting comment about her.
I don't love her. I mean, I get why she's there, but.
Well, we all know why she's there. But it's just...
Now, do you think it's Tamerlan only because she might be super religious and use the vampire curse against the town to cleanse it? Just kidding. She played the main antagonist in Midnight Mass.
Yeah. Protagonist. Yeah, the movie ended up being about her. Yeah. All-time best. One of my all-time best shows. Favorite shows.
Yes, agreed. Fuck yeah. I mean, I keep telling people they need to see that first.
Mm-hmm.
No, wasn't she the... Wasn't the protagonist... What's her face? Yeah, Kate Siegel was a... Samantha Sloyan was a... The nun nurse lady that was like trying to kill everybody. And then,
yes,
remember, like, it had that very satisfying ending where she was like, well, this is what the Lord wants. But when the sun was hitting her, she starts to panic.
I got confused. I thought we were still talking about Kate Siegel, but you were talking about Samantha
Sloyan.
Got nailed it.
How about we make. Hold on, let me go back to this. How about we make this just about us trying to say people's last names? Carlin.
This is what the whole show is.
Luckily, all the white guys have very basic Greenwood. Thomas. And there's Billy McDonald. Good. Raul Coley. Oh, his name was easy. Okay. And this is the show.
Nailed it.
What else does there say about this? I mean, because I'm already ready to move on to the next episode.
Right. Yeah. Probably after this, I'll probably throw it on. If I have time tonight, I'll probably watch another episode because I am really curious. And I think I'm excited for the show. Mike Flanagan, probably our best working horror director, writer, producer, creator right now. So.
Oh, yeah.
So, I'm super excited. So. Cool.
Yeah, cool. Let's move on to this.
Didn't something happen at the end of this? What happened at the end of this? Before we move on.
It's just the attorney's trying to get something out of him, and he's like, "Oh, you're trying to hide the truth." He's like, "No, I'm not." And when he says something,
he blames himself,
your wife or your sister or something. And he's like, well, no, she's downstairs right now. I mean, she's right behind you if you want to talk to her. And he's like, oh, you're not going to like spook me or whatever. Like, I'm not.
The mom is standing behind there. Did you catch that?
Yeah.
She 100%. Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this is great. And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to turn around. And he's like, okay, I don't care. I was like, okay. And I like how he's sitting in the house, and the house has burnt down, or not down, but it has been like completely engulfed in
decrepit.
Flames.
Yeah.
And he's just like sitting there.
Yeah, it was excellent. Really cool. Can't wait to watch more. I think some people were kind of let down by the House of Blythe matter, because I think felt like what is it? The haunting at Hill House, or is that right? it was a wild, successful hit. People love that show.
Yeah.
So in the follow up, I think people were kind of turned off by its like. Romantic goth storyline. But I loved it. I thought it was fucking great.
It's got the Crimson Peak condition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I thought it was really cool. Loved it as a ghost story. And this looks really cool too. I wish I had read more Edgar Allan Poe. I've never read any of the stuff, to be honest. I've seen the Two Evils movie we reviewed. That's about the extent of my, or like the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror stuff is pretty my knowledge and extent.
If you have like 15 minutes, you can probably read most of his stuff. They're all very short, very short poems for the most part. Yeah.
So maybe it'd be time to finally look at this, because his work seems to be, comes up a lot. And I'm always kind of a lost with like, where, you know, what's any of this mean? I don't know. Yeah. So, okay, cool. Let's move over to our main review of Cemetery Man. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Yeah, and I think you mean De La Morte De La Mor.
I think I did, yeah. Excuse me. I have a bad Italian.
Written by Tiziano Sclavi, who did Dylan Dog. Anybody saw that Brandon Routh movie? It was a comic book he did. Anyway.
Okay.
For De La Morte De La Mor, coming in at number 3, Patrick Bateman moves to Italy.
That's an insult to Patrick Bateman, but all right.
Oh no, I feel like we're going to differ on this movie. Coming in at number 2, Lonely Nagi finally gets head. And coming in at number 1, The Importance of Being De La Morte.
There you go. Yep. Very nice.
So first thoughts. I enjoy this movie.
You didn't?
No, I did enjoy this movie. Yeah.
So we should we should preface this. We stumbled upon watching this movie because you had this vivid memory when we were out having drinks that you saw the cover for this movie and you wanted to watch it.
Oh, but, I mean, but like for like 20 years, I think at this point, because yeah. I would go to Best Buy and I would always try to buy another movie, or find movies based on like, oh, what's near Evil Dead, and Cemetery Men was near Evil Dead because like E and C are pretty close to each other. You mm-hmm. just got to deal with every fucking movie that starts with death or dead in between. But yeah, it was a movie that I kept seeing, and then I had like great reviews on the back of the cover because that's all we had to go off of at some point. And then I remember reading about it somewhere, like in a magazine or something, basically saying, hey, if you're a fan of Evil Dead, you'll love this movie. But I think I also misread it, and I think it said, if you're a fan of Dead Alive, you'll love this movie, which also makes sense. Makes more sense
than yeah, it does. That's correct, yeah.
So I wasn't sure what to expect, but I think if I had watched it back then, I don't know what I would have thought of it. I mean, I probably would have liked it. It's just kind of, it's a weird movie. It's like, and I think the ending truly does wrap up everything the best possible scenario of what was going on.
Right.
Yeah. But how did you feel about it? You hated it?
No, I didn't hate it. I liked it a lot. I think I was like, I felt like the resolution, I think as the movie goes on, it becomes more and more exaggerated and the narrative gets like pulled apart, you know what I mean? Because there's a very easy through line through the first like hour of this movie, but I would say the latter half kind of just became very fractured and hard to follow, and then it ends very like ambiguous, which didn't do it any favors, you know. But overall, I love the idea. I love the concept. I love the direction. You know, there's good performances. There's like a ton of like style and direction for this, in terms of like the sort of, it's set, well, it's mainly set in like a cemetery or like a small town, and everything has character and charm to it. And it's very well put together. Like the movies you mentioned, like a Dead Alive and Evil Dead and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Those areas I really like, and Rupert Everett was, I thought, was perfectly fine in this. You know, it almost feels like a comic book. You know what I mean? Like a
which again, the writer of this story is a comic book writer. Was a comic book writer.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Like Dylan Dog was a very long running, famous like horror comic that they tried to adapt into a movie and it failed miserably with Brandon Routh in 2010.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's gonna be hard for me to not like want to keep bringing up the ending because of it. Like, why?
Yeah.
I guess there's a lot of questions as to what's really going on. Mm-hmm. But there's no, and nobody seems to care about finding an answer. But there is no question whether the dead are coming back or not, because the literal like first 10 seconds of the movie mm-hmm. or him talking to his buddy Franco, allegedly, and the door swings open and a zombie walks through and he just shoots the zombie in the head and continues on his conversation like nothing happened. So we're yeah. like, okay, so it's a normal thing, and he keeps getting called an engineer, and I don't want to be like offensive to like people that work in cemeteries, but is that like I didn't understand that
engineer. Yeah, I didn't understand that either.
I don't know.
Because the idea is that somebody, the mayor is paying him to do this? Or somebody's paying him to do this, correct?
Yes? I don't know.
I got the sense that it was the mayor. Like, somebody's in the city was paying him to stay at that cemetery because the dead rises after a week. So he has to shoot him, basically zombify, and then he has to kill him and then bury him again, I guess.
Yeah, and shoot him in the head. There's like no question about that. They're just like, that's
zombies.
The way it is.
Yeah.
So allegedly the ossuary, the crypt, stylistically, this movie is pretty cool. Like, it's very dark, gritty, and everything is like very gothic looking. And I'm guessing a lot of the bones are actually real. But I don't know. I just wish we had like a better answer for like certain parts of this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the taglines is like zombies, guns, sex, oh my. And then it has like a very, you know, so it's definitely like comedy, dark comedy, horror, gothic movie. It's like a mismatch. It's like you put all those genres together and just blended them up.
Yeah. And I guess like, so the original title is De la Muerte, De la Mort, which De la Muerte is his last name. His name is Francisco De la Muerte. But then you find out his mother's maiden name is De la Mort. But that also, I don't know why that was even added in the movie, but it translates into what, of love, of death, or of death, of love.
So yeah.
I feel like that's probably a better name for the movie than Cemetery Man. But in Cemetery Man's defense, it's been knocking around in my head for that long.
Yeah, I'm assuming they changed it because they released it in America? Or the other title probably didn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, does the movie make sense? So,
yeah.
I did mention yesterday that I felt like the score was written by, like, they gave it to, like, a five-year-old, and they gave the five-year-old all these cool, like, sample sounds. Like, just like, have fun with it. Because the score is wacky, to say the least. It is kind of awful. And you know who was originally penned to write the score?
No.
Tangerine Dream.
Ah, of course. Yeah. I mean, anything in the 80s, they were like the goat. For some reason, they were the go-to
Tangerine Dream
musicians.
Or Goblin. There was no in-between.
Yeah. Is there a difference? I don't know.
That's why John Carpenter was like, nah, fuck that.
Fuck you. I'll do it myself. Just real angry.
I can make way creepier songs. Big Trouble in Little China.
I like our John Carpenter's, like our David Lynch, they're screaming old man.
Because he is. I don't know.
Yeah, it's true. He is. He's a very mad old man.
You know, what can we say about this? So he's killing these zombies. His assistant, Nagi, can't say anything outside of one word. We don't, you know. So we assume he's like a simple person. I don't know what the proper terminology is.
You're canceled.
Because a part of me is like, this was clearly written to be like, hey, we don't care what he is, like, just make him like dumb, or like, I don't know, something about it is probably very offensive, that character. But
he also likes underage girls. That was a little weird.
A little weird. Just the head. Okay.
And he had a sweet ass violin situation, guitar.
Or whatever the hell that was. Yeah. He lives. Yeah. Oh, also, another funny thing is they both live in, I don't even know what that is. Like a shed, like a real shitty looking shed in the middle of the cemetery.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Stays up top and stays up all night drinking wine, talking to his friend Franco. And then, Nagi is downstairs just watching TV.
And the sort of the crux of the story kind of kicks off when there's a new burial and there's a young, you know, widow to an older she is the character's name. So she, you know, he's immediately infatuated with her and tries to talk to her, but kind of fails at it. And sort of the plot kind of kicks off from there,
This is where it like starts to get a little like, what is going on? So what, they're about to like have sex in what do you call that thing? Ossuary?
Crypt?
I think is what it's called.
Is it what's it? What would be a plainer definition? Because I was confused by that. Is it like a crypt, or? Sorry, you're right in your what you said, but I didn't get an idea what it was.
So it's just a crypt for bones. I don't know what that means. I guess there was a bunch of skeletons just hanging out in there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
She's trying to move away, and she's like, no, this place, it's making me do things I don't want to do. And then she gets up to one of the skeletons that's hanging on the wall, and the skeleton proceeds to...
undress her.
Her clothes up, but, like, the skeleton's not moving. It's just, like, she's doing it herself, kind of.
Yeah.
And then he goes outside to run after her, and she's by his grave, and then they proceed to have sex. But all in the meanwhile, she's like, what are these floating lights? So they have all these like little spirit orbs that kind of remind me of how Sue.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're like floating blue flames.
Or like the Nightmare on Elm Street little sperm sights that we saw.
The worm spurs, whatever the hell they are.
The worm spurs, yeah.
The piranha spurs.
Yeah.
And he's like, he blows one out, and then he kind of tells him like, hey, we need privacy. But then her husband comes back and proceeds to bite her neck, and she dies from shock is what they said.
Sure. Yep.
That's where I was like, what is going on in this movie? Like, is he going to wait for her to come back? And then I thought that was what the movie was going to be, was like, he decides to stay with her.
Mm-hmm.
But that also doesn't happen. It's like this movie just keeps going and going and going, and there's no stopping. Like,
yeah,
you can never guess what's gonna happen next because it almost feels made up.
Yeah, it was a very kind of like it's a series of events are happening to our main character. This was this wasn't like a. It wasn't only about her. It was like about, I don't know, his whole life, right? Like, it would just move really on just to one thing after the other, yeah. So, yeah. But she...
Because I have a thought about that, too.
Okay. Would it be better if you just go into spoilers? I mean, we kind of just... We gave our first thoughts for it, so...
Yeah.
Okay. You want to go to spoilers?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
spoilers. So I'm wondering if these are just like the stages of like his version of Dante's Inferno. Like, I keep thinking he's in purgatory. And like the reason things keep going and going is because he doesn't want to come to realizations that he needs to come to.
That actually tracks really well. Like it seems like it's a hell of his creation, right? Like a kind of situation. But what I was confused about the ending, because he's trapped in a snow globe, and I forgot that they do mention a snow globe right in the beginning, but I kind of missed the significance of it. Was there much significance?
I don't know. I mean, maybe, but that might just be like a Citizen Kane thing that the writer wanted to throw in.
Right. Like, we have to establish this because we got to get to the end of the movie. Yeah.
That's why I think also this is Nagi's story also. And they're taking turns being caretaker or whatever to... I don't know. Like, maybe Nagi has some unfinished business too. I don't know. It was like such an interesting way to end the film, because it could be disappointing, but it also would make a lot of the movie more justifiable instead of him just like being able to run away.
Because he's literally like shooting people. Death appears and says that, stop doing my job. The actual literal manifestation of death comes and tells him, like, stop killing people, stop killing the dead. That's my job. Why don't you kill the living? is one conversation that comes. Yeah. So, which also lends more to the idea that he's in some sort of hell. You know what I mean? His, you know, like, yeah, a thing he created or something, you know, like a.
Because those conversations also did confuse me, because I'm like, oh, is he supposed to be like the angel of death on mm-hmm. Earth, right? And that's why the angel of death from hell or whatever is like, hey, stop killing my guys. That's my job.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also like, then where you at, bruv? Because you haven't been doing your job.
Because they never really explain why corpses rise from their graves.
No, it is
other just, than this is what his job is.
Yeah.
And then, but then this all this other stuff happens right in town, and then he wants to leave the town. So,
like, a lot of wild stuff. Like, probably my favorite stuff, scene in the entire movie is he goes to talk to the mayor with Nagi in town. Mm-hmm. And Nagi is super smitten with the mayor's like 17-year-old daughter or whatever.
I thought she was younger, but all right.
I mean, I'm not sure. Because then the other people look older, too. I didn't quite understand that yet. But he, like, Nagi ends up throwing up on her, and I'm like, wow, way to go. Like, this guy has such an immense career of being that thing in City of Lost Children, that thing with the monocle. That to throwing up on an underage girl. Because he's in love with
her. Yeah. And he saves her head.
But then...
in a relationship.
Her, like, boyfriend? Question mark? Who's not really her boyfriend because some other guy...
Not really her boyfriend. Yeah, no, I think, like, it's
super
just...
in love with her. Him.
Yeah.
He shows up on his bike, like, right in the middle of where they're eating, because I guess that's cool to do in Italy. And he's like, oh, what are you doing? And she's on the ground. She's like, oh, that guy threw up on me. And then he's like, oh, okay, well, want to ride? And she's like, I knew you'd understand. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, hey, homegirl, go home and shower.
And then even the mayor is like, oh, young people, I'll never understand them or something along those lines. And then he just, like, dismisses, totally unreacts to his daughter leaving with some random guy on a bike.
And then Francisco's like, well, you know, they have no idea how fleeting life is and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, are they going to fucking kill off this group of kids on a motorcycle?
Child.
And that is exactly what they do. They have a big bus full of scout-style children. I don't know what they are in other countries, but, like, Boy Scout-style children collide into each other. Her head looked like it got, like, blown up like a Gallagher hammer to a watermelon. But they were able to stitch it back together somehow. Because I even, like, paused it. I'm like, whoa, the tire ran right over her head and it exploded.
Right, yeah.
But then she's the only one in a glass coffin. And they decided to bury the guy with his motorcycle because they fused together, question mark? Because he looked like something out of, like, a Takashi Mike fucking movie. Like, And then the scout kids all died too because the bus fell off the cliff. I was like, what?
Yeah.
So there was a lot going on there.
Yeah, it just gets more absurd, like, as the story progresses. Like you were saying, like, the she character comes back to life several times. She plays, like, three different women seduce him. And but I feel like the way it's played is, like, Rupert Everett's character is kind of understands that this woman's the same woman.
Yeah.
In each instance.
The every time she comes back, there's always, like, a little bit of dialogue suggesting that this new character acknowledges that they're the old character. Like, because the new mayor, okay. So that girl that Nagi was interested in does come back, and he has a brief relationship with her, but only her head, because he accidentally rips her head off of her body, pulling her out of the casket, the glass casket.
Mm-hmm.
What happens there is the daughter ends up killing her own father. Rupert Everett just kills them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then the first human person Rupert ever kills is the motorcycle guy comes back. There's some other random girl that's super in love with him.
That was my favorite scene, dude.
And every single moment in this movie kind of reminds me of like another movie. And I'm like, is a dude just paying like homage to every single horror movie he loves? Because
yeah,
that part where she gets on the motorcycle with him, because I thought for sure that the dude was gonna like, I don't know, spin the tires on her head or something, because she like cuddles up next to the tire at one point, gets on the tire. He finds them and he is going to like just munching on her arm.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, no, like it's okay. He can have what he wants, blah, blah, blah. And that reminded me of Return of the Living Dead. I think the first one? No, the second one. I don't remember. But there's a part where like this cheerleader's boyfriend, this like dumb jock, gets killed or like, becomes a zombie. And she's running away from the entire movie. And then at the end, she's like, why are you doing this? Why do you keep trying to do this? And the zombified jock guy's like, oh, I don't know. I just want to eat your brain. And she's like, well, okay. She just lets herself get eaten. It's really funny. And that's exactly what it reminded me of. Then Rupert had such a great shot that he shot them both in the head at the same time.
Yeah, clearly. Rupert Everett's so talented. I was going to say, I might have an idea of what's going on, because I was just thinking right now, Franco is the name of the guy that is his friend that he talks to on the phone all the time, right? But his name, isn't that very similar to our, you know, Rupert Everett's character is Francesco?
Yeah.
And he's talking to him and maybe Franco was imagining Francesco in some way, because we do find him in a coma, right? And yeah. Nothing else makes sense in this movie, right? So maybe this is some like, not to spoil another movie, but like, you know how Come True is about somebody in a coma? And that this could be about him, about the people that he's having these whatever dreams or whatever in a coma.
The only thing is, like, when Francisco goes and meets Franco in the hospital, he comes to and has no idea who Francisco is.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And they also did, it looks like they cast somebody that looks similar to Rupert Everett on purpose, intentionally, to make it seem that way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think the whole thing is just a purgatory style thing.
Yeah, because like, no, I was going to say, because you notice how like the cop never suspected Francesco, Rupert Everett's character?
Yeah, because he's impotent.
That was kind of like one of the jokes. That was like one of the jokes of the movie, was that like he just like, oh, after he kills some people in the hospital, he's like, there's a man with a gun. Good thing you brought your gun, Francesco. Like, yeah. I thought that scene was funny. But it's like the cop is never... it's never realistic. He's never truly questioning, you know, Francesco or...
No, and about, even when he has solid evidence, he's like, nah, I can't be you. Like, he just refuses to believe it's right. Him. He could do it.
He
even blames Nagi at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as that happened... Oh, that's when Nagi is like... underage, just ahead girlfriend, kills her father, the mayor...
Right,
and then Rupert Everett shoots them both in the head. Not yet, but like, you know, kills them or whatever. And then the cop comes down there and he's like, oh, what happened here? And he's like, oh, it would just be another one of your unsolved cases. And then it just ends there. That's the extent of it.
The extent of it, yeah.
Until you meet the new mayor, right? And then...
Mm-hmm.
Which, that whole thing was fucking weird, too. That's why I keep thinking it's like his own hell, right? Or like maybe, I don't know, he's being conditioned to be the new... Angel of Death, maybe.
I can see that too. Those are, you know, reasonable assumptions. Yeah,
because the new version of she has this thing where she's like, no, I have a phobia of being penetrated. It's like, what? So Rupert Everett is like, oh, okay. Even though he's supposed to be impotent, goes to a doctor to get his dick chopped off, and has said the doctor mm-hmm. can't do it, so proceeds to inject his penis with a comically large syringe full of like what looked like beer to me, but it's like this will make right. you impotent for like, you know, for a month or whatever. And then he goes back and he's feeling sick and then he feels better and then she pops up again and she's like, I don't want to be with you anymore because the mayor raped me, but it's a good thing because now I don't have a phobia and we're going to get married. Like, what? Sure. So he's feeling bad. He goes to a bar, gets picked up by three different women, and one of them looks like she again.
Yeah.
And then he's like, no, I'm on a medication, but he's able to have sex.
Yeah.
And then he's like maybe being too aggressive about it. And then he finds out that they might be prostitutes trying to get through school. So he mm-hmm. proceeds to put the heater, which these are old school heaters, underneath the sheet next to her and sets the entire house on fire.
This is very much like a adolescent's interpretation or written story.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you know what I mean? Why is everything so aggressive? Like,
yeah. Yeah, very aggressive towards women and just violent and yeah.
Yeah. Like yeah. I don't know. But yeah, that's kind of the whole movie. Like them becoming zombies and coming back kind of becomes like a secondary thing just because yeah. it's natural to the story already and it doesn't really matter at that point. It just becomes about yeah. his like psyche.
Yeah, things get way weirder as the story progresses. Like the whole zombie thing is kind of like the least weird thing of the whole movie.
Yeah, surprisingly, yeah.
So, but a few things actually kind of made sense. Like there's things they kind of set it up and they kind of fall through with it. You know what's going on, but then there's just random thing after random thing keep yeah. happening.
So. Which I kind of wish I had been writing down a lot of the dialogue as I was watching this because it was like really funny because it was so strange. Like he's being. Like fucking teased yeah. by the dead most of the time. It's just like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool movie. I think I just want to quickly mention that it's getting a 4K Blu-ray release, which is actually sounds kind of interesting.
That is pretty cool.
It's definitely yeah. something to kind of pick up and buy.
Because they have never been able to make an American version. They were trying.
Right.
I think they had.
I'm not sure how you would do one.
Matt Dillon, you know, like, tagged as Francesco.
Yeah. But, don't know if he can do it now. I don't. Yeah, uninterested.
I don't think either of them can do it now. Just put Timothy Chalamet in it, right? I'm just kidding.
Oh, God. My eyes rolled out of my face.
Oh, you know what? What's his name? Dahmer, American Horror Story.
I ain't talking about. Quicksilver,
yeah.
Yeah. Even then, I don't even think he's it's quite right.
I think he'd do pretty good because he can play unhinged pretty easily.
Yeah. What's Patrick, was it Fugit?
Oh, Fugit? Yeah, Patrick Fugit.
You can fucking do it.
Patrick Wilson.
The weirdo. Owen Wilson.
just change it to Vera. What's her name? Flamingo. Oh, I'm just butchering last names today. I'm sorry. I'm out of it. I'm out of it watching this movie. Just like trying to make sense of my life now. I'm like,
this is not the movie to contemplate life.
It gave me so much to question.
Alrighty. Any other thoughts before we rate it?
Just apparently there was an Ozzy Osbourne song that played every time the motorcycle was on screen, but I couldn't hear it. So.
Couldn't hear it either.
Wouldn't have known.
Yeah. So we did acquire a version of this movie. So the Blu-ray would have been nice. Yeah. Okay. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones?
Don't do that. Just I'm going to give Delamore de la Morte 6.6 sexy spooky bones.
Okay. See, I was going to give it a 6.2, but we're kind of in the same realm. I thought maybe you liked it more, but 6 is kind of where I was going to rate it as well.
I feel like it's about there. Yeah.
It's a good movie. Yeah. It's one of those that it's a cult movie. Go into it knowing you're going to get a lot of stuff thrown at you, you know? This definitely isn't a like put on and in the background you're just chilling, relaxing kind of movie. This is like art house movie, you know? Like it's the one you gotta sit and think, and it you know presents its story in a very fun, crazy way. So
I think it would be like a pretty good like bar movie. I always thought about like opening up a bar and just putting on all these obscure horror movies.
Oh, that'd be really cool.
There was a bar I used to go to called, I think we did go a handful of times, the Holloway. It doesn't exist anymore, but they used to just have like the most obscure fucking movies on screen.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a fun time. I think I should be clear about my ratings. When I say, hey, this is like the perfect movie, it's like a blend of being like very original, maybe scary, maybe fun, right? I will say most of the time I do rewatch the movies that I probably rate between like 5 and 7 more because they're easier and more digestible. I'm not saying this is super digestible, but I think after a few watches, you're like, oh, I know what's happening.
Cool. Yeah. Makes sense. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky, Frankel.